Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 175 of Cyclocross Radio, The Media Pit. I bet you were all expecting those dulcet baritones of Bill Chaiken, but he's over in Switzerland cranking out that CX World content. And so you have me, Michael Bodekheimer, here to do this intro. Before we get on to the episode, I wanted to give a quick shout out to two of the sponsors of this show. One of those sponsors being Whoop. I'm actually wearing a Whoop strap right now that I got because of their advertising on the Wide Angle Podium Network. So big ups to Whoop. I hope you guys hear this and continue to support this network. I gotta say, as an athlete who's been racing bikes for a few years now, one of the things I love about Whoop is the sleep tracking. It really lets me know what kind of sleep I'm getting and what the quality of it is. I think we all sort of know what our strain is from working out a lot. We understand how much effort we put into it, but being able to really understand where I'm at when it comes to sleep has been a game changer for me. One other sponsor we want to give a shout out to is Works Hydro Shot. I've heard so much good things about these battery-powered portable bicycle cleaners that I suggest you go to the Works website and look for a Hydro Shot, and they've got all sorts of accessories to keep your bike clean. And apparently they have other tools that are all battery-run that a lot of cyclists are finding useful too. So go check out the Works, go check out Whoop, and let's just get right into the media pit right now.
Hello and welcome to some episode of Cyclocross Radio. This is Bill in Switzerland.
This is Zach in Madison, Wisconsin.
This is Michael in New Orleans, Louisiana, United States of America.
Wait, whoa. Bill, you're in Switzerland?
I am in Switzerland, hanging out in the Hotel Wasberg in I don't even know the town I'm in. It's outside. It's somewhere between Zurich and Dubendorf.
So
it's by a really nice lake.
I mean, before we get to it, like, have you had Swiss chocolate? Because that's all we really came up with in terms of what they have, like chocolate and like bank accounts.
Chocolate, bank accounts, and cheese. Okay. I've had two of the three, and both have been wonderful so far.
Chocolate and cheese. That's a pretty good album, if I remember correctly.
Who was that?
Ween.
Ween,
I thought
right.
I thought you were going to know that, Bill. All
right. I was... if you want to know what went through my head, and this is horrible to... for some reason, I can't even think of the band. What was the hot dog water? Horrible band.
Limp Bizkit.
Fred Durst. Limp Bizkit, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's close into the weird sounding food albums. Yeah. There's probably some other good ones out there that I can't think of the top of my head, but
Sailing the Seas of Cheese.
I think that's Primus. Is that a Les Claypool band album?
It is. Yep.
What is Primus. That band?
Primus.
Primus. Okay. Yeah. We've got band talk out of the way.
And cheese talk. You want to, like, you're in Wisconsin. Any cheese talk you want to throw in here, Zach?
No, I'm really bad at my cheese. I don't know. I don't have the expertise that you guys do. So I'm going to defer on this one.
Do you have a cheese head?
I do. I bought one.
Ooh.
So I bought one. actually, this idea came from from Dave Toll, actually. So he was like, when we were at the Trek CX Cup, he was like, you need to do Wisconsin Ness. And so I interviewed Sven Ness.
That came from Dave Toll?
That was his idea. And so if you go back to my interview with Sven from 2017 at the Trek CX Cup, I got Sven to put a cheese head on momentarily at the end of our interview.
Oh, fantastic.
And he was Wisconsin Ness.
Nice.
So I still have the cheese head. It's actually in my closet, like right behind me. I haven't worn it since, but I do have a cheese head. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah. Well, speaking of bits, are we? So we've our fellow Wide Angle Podium member, the Slow Ride Pod. They're encroaching on our friend Michael's territory. So, Bill, don't you have a question for Michael here at the start of this podcast?
I do have a question, you know, and that's why we kind of started. We sort of stole the Slow Rides opening just because I wanted to, you know, say that I was in Switzerland. But, Michael, how's it going?
Oh, Bill, admittedly, I wanted to hide from this open. I mean, I can't really compare to little guy's punny bit about the World Cup podium. I mean, anything I do would be a dad joke or worst, but I guess maybe that's my brand. So we're just going to go with that.
I
kind of workshopped that on Twitter.
Yeah, I here would be my criticism for Michael, and we can you know, get back to him on this later. I think he's going to the well once too many times on the worst.
I was kind of thinking the same thing. I feel like eventually,
eventually.
You need, I was looking for a word that would work, but eventually you need to like branch out and you know, incorporate some different riders into your pun game.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if some different riders would get up to the front of the races, I would incorporate them.
That's fair. You know, that's a fair point.
There's got to be some sort of Tebow, you know, disappointment type pun in there somewhere. Well, this may be
was he
stuff
feeling
we be
sadness
about.
After his race?
He was,
based on your photo, he was.
Boom. Yes.
Tebow, not niceness.
Yeah. Oh man. Oh boy. Well, hey, we got world championships are coming up literally like
sad.
A couple days from
now. Zach, sadness. Sadness would have been the perfect photo caption.
Oh my gosh. That would have been really
good. So this is what happens when the media pit isn't together. I think there's a certain level, you know, there's that level of I'm going to use the word synergy that happens in the media pit when we bounce ideas off one another. And I think, you know, you're flying solo at Worlds without us right now, but you know, I think in due time we'll be back together in our pun game. And I use the word synergy. That's just sad.
You could change it to Svenergy.
Oh, nice! It is Svenergy. This is cyclocross. This is the cyclocross media pit. It is Svenergy.
Svenergy.
Well, yeah. The Lions are really going to need to channel any sort of Svenergy if they want to. I don't know, bring any sort of medals home.
We got to get into our picks, but not to tip my hand. I think the Lions are pretty secure in at least one medal in the elite level.
At Worlds? Yeah. Oh, medal, not gold, right?
Yeah, gold.
You're going in for brand.
I'm all in for brand.
Okay. I thought...
Yeah, is that because you've seen the course, Bill, and you've got some ideas about
I have been in Switzerland since Monday until today. I have seen the course zero times. So tomorrow will actually be the first time I'm at the venue.
Huh. Well,
I can give you a conditions update though before we get into any more Worlds talk.
Well, should we speculate about the course and what we think is going to happen? I think that'll be, should we do that?
Yeah.
So we'll look like idiots when you publish your track walk tomorrow.
Yeah, okay. But let me just say to start with that, just how the conditions are in this area. The weather changes pretty much hourly. I'd say it's anywhere between 30 and 40 degrees all day. 30 to 40 Fahrenheit all day long. It goes from sunshine to the deepest, darkest fog to rain to sleet to snow pretty much in a cycle throughout the day. So I went for this walk this morning, started out in sunshine, got rained on a little bit, changed to sleet, and then it was really nice because it was just snowing, and then it had all stopped by the time I got home, like, you know, a couple hours later. And when there were a couple, it's like really great gravel riding around here, I'll tell you that. Some of the roads are just amazing and hilly and just beautiful terrain. But I walked off into some of these fields and they just look like grass fields, and my shoes just sunk. I mean, it was some of the softest ground that I've ever walked through. Like, you're not, I know that the venue, they're saying it's more clay, but what I'm experiencing so far with Switzerland and just walking in fields is that you just sink right through it. So it might be different, but I have a feeling it could be pretty boggy.
So it sounds to me, and you were there, it sounds to me this could be kind of similar to Fayetteville. I mean, right? Like Fayetteville ended up being a relatively flat track kind of thing and turned into a mud bog. I don't know. It just sounds like it could be like a similar vibe to that, although the clay stuff sounds like Louisville Nationals type mud.
Well, if it's, it all depends because that Fayetteville mud was really thin.
Oh,
like it wasn't really slowing people down a lot. Uh-huh. So it's really, you know, I say this about the thick mud that I'm seeing here, but you know, it's 11K away. I'm up pretty high. So, and that's in an airport. So who knows? So it really is, you know, we're saying all this without really knowing. But yeah, if it's like Fayetteville, that was just wet, you know, it was just like super wet and just splashy. It wasn't really the, oh God, we're just, you know, low cadence, just mud driving.
Yeah. So, well, in all things, it sounds like it'll certainly definitely be different than Bowenso was, where it was just kind of like frozen. Even if it tried to be muddy, yeah, it was like the ground there was so cold and frozen. But we were discussing in the green room, it really seems like conditions in terms of who we're looking at with, you know, either winning podium potential, wide angle podium potential, it seems like it might be affected by the conditions, no? And how this mud works, how this mud functions.
I think that's really what we're looking at because of the way the course is and the track is. They're UCI released a virtual track walk and it does look extremely flat except for a few little features on mounds, which I think if it's completely dry, which is not going to be, would be a super fast course, and I think that would favor one type of rider. And then if it's boggy, like you're saying, Bill, I think that does tip it slightly away from some of these these faster riders like Brand. But I guess it really matters. Like, yeah, is it going to be a tractor pull where it's like just straight power, or is it going to be something that it's you're slipping and sliding all over the place, and you really need some of those technical skills? And you know, we saw the way, you know, one rut last weekend really sort of decided that women's race, and it was one feature that was pretty active in causing accidents in the beginning and the end of the race. And so, you know, we haven't seen anything yet on the course like what those features are, but I could see something like that happening at the Dubendorf course. And so, yeah, I'm curious to see hopefully you're going to bring us track walk, Bill, and we'll have a little more insight when I make my roller derby bets.
Yeah, well, looking at the virtual walkthrough, Zach, it really looks like this is another track that, and I know you and I have talked about this a lot, the kind of the one berm or the one hill venues where you have this one feat, you know, you talk about Bonza, you talk about Louisville, Hartford, even Tacoma this year, where it's like, we got this feature and we're going to use the hell out of it.
Well, they kind of have no choice. I mean, it's again at an airport. And so I think it was interesting. You called it flatty cross. I was wondering if it might make it to like fly E cross or air. I don't know. There's still time to give it a name, but yeah. And you know, and there, it's not anywhere as steep and awesome as the seawall at Bowenso was. It's nowhere near as steep as, I mean, based on what I've seen, it's like a small berm. I mean, it, honestly kind of looks like what I mean, Michael, you're the levy expert. I mean, this looks like probably what a New Orleans cross race looks like.
Hey, let me tell you, you can get a lot of juice out of a levy. I've had to work some magic from levy walls. I just, you know, I think I actually realized why it's at the airport now, and that's so all the Belgians can still fly right into the venue and not have to travel that far, right? Is that how it works?
They might.
Is that a working? They is that a working might. Airport? Actually, like,
I don't think it is. But I'm not sure. It's like an airfield. Yeah. So the levees. Do you think they'll have nutrias there, like climbing on them?
I hope not. Those destroy levees. Yeah, I don't know if the Swiss has a bounty on Nutria.
There's also, so it'll be interesting because it's got the one berm feature, plus it looks like maybe some time spent at Cross Vegas as far as everything that they're building to sort of create features there as well.
Some of those looked, I mean, at least in the virtual walk, like some of those flyovers looked really high. And so, you know, perhaps they could have done like just gone full on and made like artificial climbs with, you know, like a two or three, kind of like the Charm City flyover, but with climbing, you know, make it a ramp and some kind of descent. I'm sure that's totally, the descents probably wouldn't be very UCI legal, but yeah, it seems like, you know, there's been some, looking at photos or what little we've seen, some work being done, and seems like relatively close to the race too. I mean, they were showing some like preliminary stuff from like Monday and they were like, hey, we're still building stuff. And it's like, wait, time out guys. Like everyone's going to be there on Wednesday. Like, do you have this together yet?
Yeah, that, I was surprised by that too. It definitely looked like things were still in the works, you know. And then Michael, we got what do you think about Matthew Vanderpoel sort of chiming in here and sort of saying what I think we were saying all along? Is like, wow, you know, we watch Swiss races all the time. We have the whole EKZ series. There are some amazing just tracks out there that look just crazy and really cool to ride on, and this isn't one of them. And he basically said, hey, it's got to be about money, somebody, you know, this is all just a money grab somehow.
Wow. I mean, that's, I don't feel like we've ever heard Vanderpoel speak out in that way. Yeah, I mean, but he brings up a great point. Like, I think that's sort of what people have been saying since they announced this course. Like, what is the deal? I'm actually watching the track right now, and they really are trying to make the most out of this one off camber. I don't know. I guess either way, it's interesting that it doesn't really matter for Vanderpoel because he can win at any course. So I do appreciate that he's wanting something more challenging and maybe not just a, you know, let's put a course where the, you know, biggest, you know, pockets are. I don't know. I'm curious to know why this is there.
Well, I think that we actually got some insight into how this works. I mean, you know, I guess there's always been kind of nebulous, but, you know, with the folks doing Fayetteville, you know, I guess I did an interview and was kind of like, I think we've kind of learned that it costs a lot of money, and someone with that money says, I would like to host the world championships, and they put in a bid. There's not like this coordination or whatever. There's not like, oh, you know, like USA Cycling wasn't like, haha, where should we go? It was like Fayetteville came up and they did this. And the same is true as Bowen. So, you know, last year when I went to Worlds, I stayed with Joachim Parbo, who was like Mr. Danish cyclocross. And we were like, oh, what kind of, you must be involved with this. Like, you're probably, he's like, yeah, I'm not doing anything. Like, this is someone else, you know? So I think it just, it's about who has the money. It costs a lot to put on Worlds. And there, it's not like, you know, we saw like EKZ can't even afford to do a World Cup next year, you know? And so I think that's part of the challenge is, you know, we see this for nationals too. It's like, you want to put in a bid for nationals, you don't have to have any relationship with the local scene or whatever. It's like, if you got the money and you want to do it, put in your bid. And yeah, another thing too, that we, you know, we all forever do this with, you know, the infamous Austin Nationals, but there's never been an event at this venue that we know of, at least at the high level, you know, at least with Bowen, so there was a World Cup. You know, we saw that with Bjelz, like no event there. And it turns out that there was a, you know, rock slag underneath the ground. And so,
right,
you know, I think we're going to see that. I mean, you know, we could see that in terms of how this course rides and what it looks like, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy that they're going to be, you know, it's one of the things that we see all the criticism sometimes in the U.S. nationals from the elite side, that oh, the track is already ruined by the time we get there, there's so many people riding on it, where this is going to be the complete opposite. There's been like no pre-riding, there's going to be just a day 2 days of practice and then we're racing, but it's, you know, it's a pretty limited number of runs that are going to be burning in this track. So that's going to be something too. I have a feeling it's going to be pretty bumpy out there. Should we talk? We sort of jumped right into World. Should we talk about what we think is going to happen there? Or do you want to move to Hoogerheide and sort of lead in with that?
Let's do the green room to Worlds. Let's talk some Hoogerheide. We wouldn't want to hide that one at the end of this podcast for sure.
Wow. Yeah, so Hoogerheide, having never been there before but only seeing it on TV, it was it's Adrie van der Poel's race. It's something that they've had races there now, I think, for, it's been a World Cup for 15 years. They've had races there for 20 years. It's been World Championships 2 years. The venue started out years ago as just a field, and now it's just become this residential area, usually super muddy. This year it was, I think it ended up being like in the 40s and almost 50 degrees. I was out there with Ethan Glading, and we were both kind of like just stripping. He had to go back to the ball cap by the end of the day.
Oh, wow. Oh, you know it's getting hot when Ethan goes to the Phillies, to the worn out, well-worn Phillies cap. So,
yeah, he had to go back to the car and
Cap. Did you make your down payment on the a residence in the Hooger Hideaway?
I'm telling you, man, that is,
that was all like credit to Michael, kinda, by the way. He came up with that. But did you put the down payment down?
If you stayed at the Hooger Hideaway, and how much does it cost to get the top level where you can see the descent? Was that more than the bottom level?
I want to know, like, you know, if like Aerosmith plays there, then you still get to use like your skybox for that as well, because that's really weird. Like, these apartments look like freaking skyboxes when they're up there. It's just insane. Everybody's like hanging out on the balcony watching the race go by, and the best part is that their front yards of these apartments are still dirt. Like, there's been no effort to plant grass there at all. It's just like, there's gonna be a race here every year. Yeah, we're just keeping it dirt.
That's, yeah, it's like, you, I mean, yeah, you get a condo at this place, and you're like, yeah, we love the dirt view because we know what comes afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of like too that they've kind of made the Stairway to Nowhere a little bit more of a place too, because they're kind of up in the Stairway to Nowhere area.
Yeah, well, it is. It's now the Stairway to Somewhere, and it's to those two buildings that are on top of that hill. And I still have to believe that staircase, which is a cement staircase, I mean, it's a permanent thing, was built for the race, and they're building these buildings around it.
That's amazing.
I do think, like, there's that big descent, right, where you make the U-turn and then you head up the stairs. That's an active construction zone still, like that whole area. So I have a feeling there's going to be another building next to it, and I hope that they just put it behind so that descent is then those people's front yard.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, you just have you just add another stairway, and you'll just, yeah, go up and down around these Hooger Hideaways.
Yeah.
So one thing that I think was interesting about the women's elite women's race was, you know, whenever we see a course, especially like at Louisville Nationals, there were barriers right before the finish, and we're like, oh my gosh, are those going to be decisive? And like Hartford had that really weird pro only section right before the finish that actually saved Stephen Hyde's first title, if we're being honest. But it's super interesting that you have this Stairway to Nowhere and the off camber, like the two iconic features on the course that like decided the race. Like, we don't see that very often. So that was pretty cool to see, where you're like, what could happen? And, you know, if there's like a 10-second gap, it doesn't necessarily matter. But man, what a banger. That was a ding dong battle in that women's race.
Yeah, speaking of the. So, Michael, you mentioned, and I saw the highlights, but I did not watch the whole races other than being there. And as we all know, being there versus watching it on TV, completely different experience. So you said that there were crashes on the off camber all day long. The only one I saw, well, okay, I didn't see any. The only one I heard was the Alvarado one, because it was just like this huge gasp that, you know, went out through the whole place. I mean, loud. What other crashes took place there?
Well, Brand crashed there in the third lap, sort of similar thing where she went down pretty hard, and, you know, had to fight to get back in. So it just showed you how dangerous that last rut could be. And, you know, as you watch it and, you know, watch the highlights again, you're like, oh wow, it's some foreshadowing right there. But yeah, pretty.
Did Tebow crash on the transition from the off camber to the road?
That I don't know, because that was probably up before I.
Because it's not televised. I think that may have been where he went down too.
Yeah, I mean, just that was another great race. You know, we've talked about. We've had some really great women's races this year. We have some great men's races. Sometimes the women's races aren't as great because Alvarado and. Just runs away with it. But this was a race where they were punching the entire time, and it really came down to that last lap. And just talking about the context around the race, which was super exciting, was that this was a race to win the overall as well. And you know, by Alvarado crashing out, she lost the race and lost the overall. So a lot of riding on that last rut there, and really, yeah, very dynamic finish. And I don't know. You said you heard a large gasp. I mean, Alvarado looked pretty composed on the podium. I don't know if you saw her maybe immediately after the race and, you know, or if she was ushered away. But, like, any sort of, like, immediate reaction you sensed from her after that finish?
No, other than, I mean, she definitely looked dejected as she came over the line. But I think she's a person who is pretty composed and pretty professional. And not really, I don't think that would be in her character. You know, she also had the consolation prize of still winning the World Cup in the U23. So still gets to take home that jersey. And I think, yeah, I'm sure was disappointed, but nothing like that. Nothing like what we saw, just on the other end of the spectrum with Tebow, who was visibly upset on the podium, which, again, I get. I don't like I never liked people giving Wout a hard time. The whole Wout pout, I always thought that was kind of silly. Or even Sané, you know, wanting to give her a hard time for her podium composure. I'm like, yeah, it's a huge deal.
That's
you
big.
Know, he won every World Cup. He wanted to sweep the series. If he's like, you know, doesn't want to fake it and put on a smile, I'm kind of in the camp that I'm okay with that. Yeah. But it did make for some good photos, because he was definitely not happy up there.
Well, and he's only 18, 19 years old. So, I mean, hopefully he at least, you know, it seems like Vanderpool, right? He used to do the Vanderquit. It seems like he's kind of, you know, gotten past that and shown maturity. I know, you know, I think we're like, oh, you should blah, blah, blah. And I look back at how I was at 30 or how I was at 25. And I'm like, oh my gosh, when I was 19, I can't say that I wouldn't have been really upset and acting kind of pouty. But, you know, my father would have said, dude, you can't do that anymore. So I would more like look forward in terms of how he composes himself and learns from it more than that it happened. You know, if it's still happening at 25, then we have issues. But I guess speaking of Alvarado, you know, one thing that I recall is it seems like, you know, you look at her as a rider. She's super young. She's U23. She's going to be racing elites. She has a lot of maturity in terms of how she races. Now, it certainly helps that she is incredibly powerful and can do this. But I remember in the U23 race last year, she kind of picked up this spot somewhere on the beach or the seawall that she was going to make her move. And she went for it. And, like, they covered and she finished third or whatever. But, you know, she was like, after the race, she's like, yeah, I'd kind of pick that spot. And it seems like, I don't know, Michael, if you have this impression, she kind of picked her spot at the end of that race too. It's like she was like, Brand was really going all in on kind of holding her lead and leading the way, and she's like, no, I'm gonna sprint up the stairs, I'm gonna absolutely explode at the top of this feature. Did you get that impression that she was kind of sizing up that spot and getting ready to make her move there?
I didn't get the impression that like she was sizing it up, but it seemed that that was the feature for her to make the move. So yeah, you're probably right. And you know, she attacked on the stairs, and Brand actually matches her, but she gets into her pedals and just like, she's just quicker in that transition from off bike to on bike that she's able to get ahead of Brand there. And yeah, I guess it's one of those things, you know, like, and we've talked about this before, she puts in the effort to make that move, and then you're a little bit like lights out and trying to do that last technical feature and just missed it. But you know, she actually immediately got up, was fairly composed, but then I guess her chain was completely dropped, so she had to like, I mean, she maybe could have got on the podium, but she had a mechanical as well, so that held her back there.
She also fell down a wall. Like, her bike went flying off a
that's
wall.
True.
I mean, I don't know. It just seems like, because they were all lined up, you know, Evie was, she was the dangler of that group. But, you know, I don't know. I think it would have been tough to fit back in. I mean, she felt like her bike went flying. But
yeah. Well, here's my question with that whole strategically looking at that race and how she raced that race. I would say that if she went all in on that move and put in that huge effort, and if she was pushing herself a little beyond the limit, and that's what caused her to miscalculate that rut and go down, that it wasn't worth the risk, because this is not the type of race. You know, we talk about so many races where the sprint's before the sprint, right? This is not that kind of race. Like, you did not have to be first to the bottom of that feature, because that was a long, long sprint. I mean, you had to, there's no way you can sustain an effort from the time that you get off that feature, do the downhill, and then actually make that long uphill to the finish. You know, there's time to be in there. I think the problem that Alvarado had was that she's coming in there with worst, but even worse than that is that she's coming in there with Brand.
Yeah.
And if you want to beat Lucinda Brand, you have to do it a quarter of a lap before that, if not even a half a lap. And you have to maintain that 4 or 5 second lead before you even get to the off camber, because Brand's just going to shut it down. I mean, she's just that much better when it comes to a sprint than anyone else out there.
Well, and that must have been part of her calculation. I mean, if you're saying that, you definitely don't want to come in there second wheel. But, you know, at the same time, and maybe she'll learn this, I mean, in all honesty, like, maybe she could have gone one match fewer and, you know, brake checked, or, you know, slowed up. I don't know, you know, struggle a little bit with that off camber. You know, certainly it's the kind of feature where if you hesitate at the front, you can force a rider behind you into a mistake or something like that. So I don't know. But yeah, I think that's an excellent observation, Bill, like, for sure.
Can we talk about Evie Richards for a second?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She was, I just would say, I just love that she was back in it, you know, just causing trouble, you know, just hitting it hard and making the other, the racers have to work for it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually putting together one of these, heat checks for Flow Bikes. Here's my spoiler. Evie's in there. She's like, I mean, Zach, you know, the origins of the heat check. She's the ultimate heat check. She got in the race. Before the race, she was like, oh yeah, I didn't know if I was going to race cyclocross or not. I figured I'd just, you know, come out there and race some. And she's there and she's just like, screw it, I'm going. Let's see what I got. I think I feel good. And just like off the front, and everybody's like, what's going on? Who is that? I mean, they know who she is, but like, come on. And it took them about a lap or so to, you know, bring her back into the fold. But I think she was just out there having fun, just making chaos.
She's like the Vinny the Microwave Johnson of the women's cyclocross field. And it's like, if she's it, huh?
What?
They called him the microwave. Oh, it's like when the microwave got going, man. Like he was lights out. He was the original like heat check. But yeah, she did
controlled
that at track
chaos.
Too. She went out right. She just went out bonkers in that Trek World Cup, and everyone's like, you have to respect it because she can ride away from you, especially as she gets her form back. I mean, she's had an off year form wise. But yeah. You know, and that could play a factor into how Worlds goes. I mean, I don't know what her call-up is going to be, and I'm sure that might be a little bit of a struggle for her, but that might mess with, if she can get up there, that could mess with the program that's been established in this elite women's field so far this year.
Yeah, not to tip my hands there, but yeah, I think that, and again, I know people are like banging their head against the wall listening to us talk about a course that we have no idea what it's like. And let me just apologize for that after the fact. But I, if it's heavy, because that's kind of the deal, though. She did this on a fast course where we know just from where she's won her world championships, where she excels is on a heavy course. So if it's a slog, I think she might have something to say when it comes to Worlds.
Yeah, she's an interesting X factor to think about. Like I mean, I'm looking at the roller derby props, trying to make my decisions, you know, and seeing, I like Evie's odds. Like that's, you know, you can put down a little dimp on that and you might be okay. So
Before we leave the elite women's race, we've got it. Yeah. The last time this year, the ultimate, the final one before Worlds, Michael, the Sonic Hunt watch.
Man, I really feel like I wish that I had like a better sort of a metaphor to use with Sana, this Kant watch. But dude, Trent, looking good, like might make me eat my words from all season. Kind of dangling off the back of that front group, kind of bridged up to them, I think, towards the end. And, you know, you could say a little bit of luck, or you could also say a little bit of wily veteran, you know, gets around, you know, the youngster in the front makes a mistake and she sneaks around and gets on the podium. So I don't know. I will say that I'm not putting all my chips in on Sana Kant, but I maybe throw her a, you know, a 25 or a faith or something like that. I feel like there's a little bit of hope there. So how's that for a watch?
If things line up for her, she fitness wise right now is in a place. Are there people that a good argument can be made are faster and better than her? For sure. But if it comes down to something strategic, if it comes down to something like we saw in Hoogerheide, where it's there's an opportunity to be had, like you said, Zach, if there is no greater opportunist than Sana Kant,
yeah.
And if she gets that chance, she will be right there. And yeah, I was pretty stoked to see her up in third.
Well, we talked about this in the on the drive home from Bowen's. I mean, she's a gamer. I think that she's shown that. And I think, like, I don't know, man, maybe we can get this to when we get to Worlds. But I think if she pulled this off, like, would just be the ultimate mad respect to Sana Kant and, like, you know, her gamemanship. Just would be the most impressive to me. Like, if she pulls a win off, even more impressive than beating Voss, in part because, like, the first one was due to a mechanical. I don't know. I would just have so much respect. And she did some crazy stuff last year at Bonesa too. Like, but you know, going into it, the deck is pretty stacked against her. I mean, I was looking, like, with the exception of Boom, the Dutch women have won every single World Cup since Bern, every Super Prestige but one, and every DVV race. I mean, there's nothing to look for to be like, hey, and they won Euros. So there's literally nothing to be like, hey. You know, like last year there was Degum. You could be like, all right, she did Degum. Like there's just, it's not there this year. It'd be impressive.
It's kind of insane. They've done pretty well winning on the men's side too.
Yeah. So the men's race, dude, like how big was that front group? Look, grass
yeah.
crit? Like literally.
That was amazing. I loved it.
It was what? 11 at one point, I think. Was it more than that?
I counted 13, but yeah, at one point. Okay. But then it dropped to 11, and then it was like, I don't know, it just kept going down. But
it was so big that like Vanderpool was like, let me just let me just hang out in the back and just relax for a while.
He was like
tailgunning for a while. He was like tailgunning the lead group.
Yeah, it was like a USA Crits. It was hilarious.
You know, it was good. You had Lauren Sweck out there showing the colors for a little while, getting some camera time before doing his professional fade. I swear that guy's peaked. He was like, got my kit. You guys just do what you need to do.
He's not elite.
So we had started the Is Lauren Sweck Elite, and I felt like it was this perfect moment. So Vanderpool goes. Does his vintage that like all the mountain bike dudes remember, like Avancini. Yeah. I'm sure he remembers that move well. But guess who was sitting second wheel and who did absolutely jack squat about chasing down Vanderpool? So is Lauren Sweck elite? I don't know.
No, he got dropped by like pretty bad. You know, he got dropped by like a Joe Flacco, you know, out route pass or something. I don't know. Like, yeah, and what he ended up in ninth position, but yeah, it was I feel like I don't know much about this race because it kind of you just once again it's one of those you kind of check out a little bit. But you do always have. I mean, Eli and Toon did show us something, and I guess the hot bet, you know, going into Worlds is who's going to get second and. What do you guys think? Do you think Eli can come around Tone?
Wait, would this be the race for top Belgian? First Belgian?
First Belgian. Race for first Belgian. Love it.
The Belgian national championships inside the world championships.
Well, so as we're recording this, I happen to have just written my preview for Cyclocross Magazine website. And so, like, basically, if you look at the head-to-head, like, Easerbeat won the first, like, 13 head-to-heads. Then when Easerbeat had his, I don't know, Easer slump, I don't have a good pun for it. You know, he went into his non-peak, right? Like his, I'm kind of checking out to peak again. Tone won like the next six, seven races. And since then, Eli Eli had won five, but then Tone beat him in Hoogerheide just to add that little bit of doubt, that question, that what's going to happen, you know, to mess with the algorithm of what's going to happen. But yeah, I mean, so I think five of the last six have gone to Ellie, but Tone, he did it. He beat him.
That's a tough one to call, really. Yeah, I'm looking at the head-to-head right now. Yeah, Ellie got four, and then Tone, yeah, four to last five, but the last one being Tone. So, man.
Well, so speaking of synergy, I would love to bring some CX Hair's written content into this. Today, posted, I guess today when we're recording this Wednesday, looked at how, you know, is Hoogerheide predictive of what's going to happen at Worlds? And if you look at like the length of the race history, it's kind of nebulous. But if you look at the last few years, especially if you take out the fact that Vanderpool and Van Aert didn't start in 2017, 11 of 13 podium positions at Worlds were riders who had finished on podiums at Hoogerheide. So that's a pretty good percentage. That would suggest, and the season's racing would suggest, that our podium at Worlds is going to be Vanderpool and some combination of Aerts and Easerbeet. Do you guys have any hot picks, any ringer? I mean, I think we're almost in like ringer territory. It, you know, last year was on lockdown too, right? Like it was going to be likely be Vanderpool, likely Van Aert, and likely Aerts. It's like they were just head and shoulders above and the other riders. And with the exception of the Sweck heat check at Floaty Cross, I don't have you guys, you know, Van Aert's there, you know, Van Turnout finished second at Valkenburg. Like, I don't know though. People have thrown out Merlier.
Van Tornout's been looking really good, but are we doing this? We doing our picks? We should do our picks.
Yeah, I'm just sorry. Yeah, I wanted to make the plug, and it seemed like a good.
No,
lead
but
in.
I think that was great, and you all should check out Zach's analysis because it's pretty cool. And Zach, I love these nerd the CX nerd stuff that you've been putting up on CXairs.com. It's been pretty awesome from the cross metrics, and now this follow up with. Hoogerheide to world success. I'm going to start.
Okay.
I'll start. We're going to start men's. And I think it kind of what you were on, but I'm, you know, I'm going to guess we're all agreed that Vanderpool is going to win. Maybe you guys have an outlier there, but I'm going Vanderpool, Tone Aertsen second, Wout van Aert in third.
Ooh.
This is going to be the big comeback race.
All right.
At 25, he is the elder statesman, even though he's not the oldest, according to Sven Vanternot on the Belgian team. He's there for leadership, so I'm giving him the bronze.
Well, speaking of that, one thing that's crazy in doing that analysis is, looking at Lars van der Haar. I mean, he finished, I think, you know, he was in the mix with, like, at the tail end of the Sven era, finishing second at Worlds and really mixing it up. And I don't know. We joke about him being old man van der Haar, but it is just this transition to the quote unquote new era has really kind of set him back. So that was kind of interesting. I'm just going to go chalk, relatively speaking. I'm going with.
Well, can I jump in there and just say that van der Haar was second Dutch at Hoegerheide?
Oh. Okay. I'm going pretty chalky. I mean, I think Vanderpool is going to win. I think he's figured things out, and we've seen, you know, more maturity and, you know, not making those mistakes. Although, who knows what kind of rocks and stuff are lying underneath, and if Wout will bust out the green tires remains to be seen. But yeah, I think Vanderpool, and I'm going to give it to Tone Aerts. We've talked about, we think it's going to be a little bit more of a power course. You know, he's recovering from the ribs, and then Ellie. So with a good ding dong battle for top Belgian, I think, between those two.
Yeah, I'm gonna pretty much agree with you guys and say Vanderpool, but I think Ellie's gonna get second. I think he wants to be the sauce boss, and he's still smarting a bit from Belgian Nats. I think Tone's gonna get third, but if I wanna pick any sort of ringer to maybe mix it up a bit, I'm gonna look towards Tom Pidcock. Maybe he slots in a fourth, but I feel like he's someone who might rise to the occasion and mix it up a bit.
Nice. All right, I like it. Let's let's just roll through these. Let's move on to the women. Zach, why don't you start us off?
I wanted to, we were talking about conditions, and I think we've neglected to, by and large, cover the North American women. And I think that was something that, you know, I wanted to talk about, is how we think that affects the North American women. And I think the calculus changes. We've seen it. Many of them are kind of grinded out. They're grinders. They're technical riders. And I think, you know, to me, we've been looking at Katie Compton is kind of, you know, she's riding like as if she's a little bit pissed off about not getting that 16th straight championship. I mean, she was darn near brilliant at Nome, and she was riding well until some argy-bargy this past weekend at Hoegerheide. And you just look at like Valkenburg, and she delivered on a thick course like that. I think same is true of Clara. She had a great race at Nome. You know, Mag Halle has been creeping into the top 10. So I don't know. I think like, I'm curious to see what the conditions are like and how it affects how the North American women are going to race. So I wanted to just get that in there. That was the other little bit about the course. I don't know if you guys have thoughts on that and what you've been seeing from them.
We did see Compton had Nome was a really great race, and she came out pretty hot at Hoegerheide, really chasing down those lap preems. But she, you know, faded that second half of the race. It's hard to once again talk about this course without seeing the conditions, but I could see Clara, Compton, and even Farringer making a top 10, and I can maybe see a top 5. I'm gonna say that.
Well, so we hinted that we were going to do some of this and continue. Synergy is my word of the day here. Do some synergy with our friends over at Roller Derby, part of the Wide Angle Podium Network. And I believe that's one of the prop bets is how many, I believe it was Americans.
Yeah.
You know, so how many Americans are going to finish in the top 10? And I still haven't made my choice on that one yet. You look at like Namur. Namur was like one of the best races, you know, North American women have had in forever. And then, you know, Zolder was a little bit quicker and faster, but then Nome happened. I don't know. I might wait till like the last minute to get my pick in for that one.
I'm definitely waiting for Bill's track walk before I make any of my bets. Do you think that?
Yeah, that's a. That's a really tough one. How many Americans? Yeah, Michael.
I just say, do you think that the roller derby is counting Katerina Nash and Magalie Rochette and Caroline Mani as Americans, or they actual flag countries?
I think you got to go by the flag.
I wonder if they're even. Yeah, I wonder if we're even. They he should have done North Americans. That would have been interesting,
right?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, all right, so we'll punt on that one. Although, you know, we've done this before, is I think Rebecca Ferringer, if she tunes in. I'm just going to say I don't think Becky's going to finish in the top 10.
All right, there you go. Perfect.
Yeah, now she is. Done. There you go.
That's it. That's the motivation. It's the Zach Schuster motivation.
I'm willing to go there. Becky, prove me wrong. And I actually believe you can. So, but please do.
So do we go to picks for women?
Yeah,
who's that?
So Bill went first last time, but
yeah,
Michael,
Zach,
you go.
Okay,
man,
Michael.
This is tough for me because it's I think it's gonna be Dutch. That's not the hard part. I might not bet this way, but the way things are going right now, I think Annemarie Wurst is going to win it. I think that it's going to be a battle between her, Alvarado, and Brand. And I can't help but think of the Brand's crash lap 3 at Hoogerheide and then her crash last year at Worlds as some sort of X factor that might happen to her. And I feel that Wurst has a really good sprint. Maybe could not beat Brand head to head, but based on what we know so far about the course, I could see her getting a slight advantage on one of these levees and then taking that to the line. So I'm going Wurst. I guess it's got to be Wurst, Brand, Alvarado. That's my podium.
Zach.
Yeah, so I'm going to take what Michael said and I'm going to play the opposite. I love the unfinished business aspect of things. I like that kind of motivation. And I think Brand is going to look back at the pit debacle that happened last year. And I think she's shown that she continues to improve with the exception of this crash. I think she has improved as a technical rider. She is a powerhouse. But I think she's going to draw on that as motivation, unfinished business, you know. They all kind of like screwed the pooch by letting Sana Kant take away that championship from the Dutch Federation last year. So I like Brand. I think Alvarado has just been brilliant this year. Her racing has been phenomenal. So I'm going to go with her second and then worst in third.
I am in line with Zach most of the way. I think Lucinda Brand, when she shows up to race, she's the best out there, you know, especially when it comes to these World Cups, when they come to these big races, and depending on what we see here, but if we have these long straight sections and then a sprint at the end, I just think she's untouchable. So I'm picking her for the win. I think that Alvarado has some unfinished business from Hoogerheide, so I think that she's going to come in here and really try to prove that she's not going to be second guessed on her decision to race elites. And to be perfectly honest, I don't think anybody should second guess that. She's an elite racer and should not be racing in the U23. And I all the more power to her that even though it's pretty much an assured thing, if she were to race that race, she's still sticking with it in the elite. So good for her there, but I'm putting her into second spot, and I already tipped my hand before, so I'm sticking with it. Evie Richards gonna get that bronze, third place for Richards.
Nice. Yeah.
I gotta say, I listened to my picks and I'm like, man, I've been all about Alvarado all year and her OPP is phenomenal, and here I'm not picking her and I feel bad, but I just,
you can change if you want.
Well, that was my pick for the show. Like I said, I might bet differently once I see the course, once I see all the points that are put up. Just quickly, in the Bill talking about Brand's ability to come in, when she races to win. I mean, her OPP is like 0.88. The only time she's been off the podium, she got fourth, and then she DNF'd because she was quite possibly crashed out by Yara Kastelein. So really, we talk about Alvarado's numbers, really hard to argue against Brand's numbers.
I will say, you know, you've mentioned roller derby a couple times. This is kind of like, I made some early bets just because the odds are better if you get in there early. But I have to say that, you know, there are a couple places that we rely on in the cyclocross journalisming. One is Cyclocross 24, yep, and the other is Cross Results. And right now, I am in this head-to-head battle with Results Boy for second place overall.
Oh,
in roller derby. I don't know if we can actually catch first place, but we've had this pretty much. We've had a DDB going all season long.
Is it a ding bet battle?
DBB, a ding dong. No, it's DDB.
Oh,
I think I got it
sorry.
Right.
No,
ding dong battle.
I was saying DBB. Sorry. Oh, it's a ding derby battle.
Oh man, you guys have like gapped me back into fourth. But Michael is creeping on. Michael, we're battling for fourth. We're battling for that podium scrub zone spot.
Yeah. Can I just say?
I like that we have
are pontificating every week about cross and
yep.
Look, Bill, you're in second. Zach, you're in fourth, and I'm in sixth. So we're not talking, you know, too much outside of our head.
We should have a 1-900 number to give our picks.
Oh man. I only could imagine the puns. I envision like Michael with like a giant lock and key as his Bodie's lock of the week.
Oh my gosh, that's great. But well, you know, you really don't want to call me because I didn't realize that the odds changed and your odds are better if you bet earlier. So
yeah, that's the change that he made. This it's just recent, but it's sort of that fluctuating thing so that if you get in early and then people keep betting and the odds keep on changing throughout.
So because that's the thing, like I haven't bet for a while because I haven't seen the odds that were good that I liked. So it's like you bet on a sure thing and you know, like you don't get anything for it. I mean, I'm still trying to understand.
It's the sure things that if you don't get on there early, then the odds just turn into trash later on. It's also the thing that I was really frustrating for me was I was pretty sure of some sure things and I kept maxing out on the bets. Like you're like, oh, I'm betting 200 on this. Oh, well, that's in not enough people have bet yet. So you are too much a percentage of the total bet. So he won't allow you to bet that amount. So you have to like lower the amount that you bet.
Yeah.
Well, I do have to say, too, I mean, I think my two of my biggest gains have come by betting on Lucinda Brand. I think for whatever reason, and I guess we've put it out there right now, she's getting 7-2 odds, which is actually, you know, a chance to actually make money.
Yeah.
But that just, I mean, to me, she should be at like 2-1 where Alvarado is. So I don't know what's going on in the hive mind, but I don't know. I've had two play. I think I made money on her at Zolder, and I think I made money on her at Hoogerheide, and that's the only reason that I'm in fourth or whatever. So just kind of interesting that you know, but like Bill, there's a good chance for your pick Evie getting 25-1 right now. You know, an American is one.
I better go bet on her right now before this comes out.
I know.
There needs to be a win placer show. Also
there should be
25% bonus for this prop. I just want to, you know, I could just bet 1,000 points on Lucinda Brand, and if she wins, I would get 3,500. Wow, that's good.
I mean, it's the end of the season. I like that, though. I mean, I think it's like go all in, man. Like go all in. You know. But obviously, people are going to listen to us because we're doing so well in the roller derby contest. You know, we have this track record apparently to back ourselves up. So I don't know. We'll have to check. We'll have to see how the odds move once this pod drops. We'll have to see how it moves the odds.
Oh, our Zufi down at 210-1. Wow.
Yeah, see, like if it was like all season, like you could have bought her after Boom when she won that race and you're like, oh, she's going good. So, you know, imagine if these props were available all year, like how this one would move, right? Like, I don't know. It'd be super interesting. Like, you know, would you have bought Ellie back in September and like, oh, maybe he'll take down, you know, right after Matthew just blew up at Worlds. It's like how the odds would have fluctuated. So that could be, you know, if they're open a little bit longer and subject to the whims of the market and people's choices, would be super interesting to see, you know. Or do you take a flyer on someone? I mean, I guess there isn't really anyone. Do you take a flyer on Wout back when he's hurt and now he's back with a shot at the podium? You know, you probably could have gotten good numbers. It's like when we told you to buy tickets for the Pelicans, Michael, to see Zion play.
I know.
You could have gotten those value buys before he announced his return.
There are tickets for like $5.
Just to give you all a minute-by-minute update on roller derby, odds for Lucinda Brand are now 3-1.
What?
Oh, wait.
Wait. Oh, my God.
Whoa. Wait.
Wow.
What? Oh.
It
just
recording.
Updated as we...
I just put my bet in.
I should have put my... Oh. Damn it.
Well, so as I'm looking, I'm looking at Sana at 7-1. And so I think, like, from a fan perspective, I can remember everyone kind of cheering for her when she won that first one. It's like she had been there.
It's worth a tenner.
You know, she had kind of been there. Everyone's like, and she's battling with Voss. And it's like, it was an incredible, one of the best races I've ever seen. Last lap, at least. One of the best last lap. Then the next year, I feel like, you know, our girl, Katie Compton, was battling with her. And Sana kind of became like the evil empire, you know. We all love Katie as fans. And Katie, by and large, was struggling to really crack that nut. You know, Sana was doing Sana Kant things in the last lap. But it seems like the last couple of years, like, Sana Kant underdog has kind of become like, you're kind of cheering for her again. I don't know about you guys, but it's like, especially with the storyline of just the Dutch dominance and coming back. Have you guys observed that? I feel like it's a little bit different. You know, last year it was like, when she pulled that off and she went for it inside two to go, and it's like, that's pretty cool. Like, if she can pull this off and you're kind of like excited for her, it's been weird. Like the fluctuations of like the Sana fandom watch, at least among people
it's
I know.
You know, you're spot on with that. And I think I've gone through it too. And I'm rooting for her the whole way now. And it's like, she has competed in as many world championships as Katie Compton at 14. It's just amazing. You know, she's the most in the women's tied with Compton. She's been around.
Sorry, I missed all you guys said because I just blew my mind by putting all my chips in on my bet. So.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
All right. Hey, let's quickly go through some of these other categories. I want to quickly just because I think we would be remiss not to mention Shireen Van, ready for it, and Roy.
Oh,
it's really easy to pronounce, actually.
Oh, I liked Anne Rui, but Anne Roy.
Well,
Roy. Okay.
Yeah, Anne Rui. I went and watched one of her triathlon videos, and she said her name, and I was like, "Oh, it's really easy,
dude." This is the journalism that people come to the media pit for, Bill.
Exactly.
This is the media.
I wanted to say at 18 years old or 17 years old, racing age 18, getting seventh place at Hoogerheide is just an amazing result, which puts her, I think, far and beyond as the favorite, or at least one of the favorites. I'm picking her for the win in the junior category. But she is also, if she wins that and continues in cyclocross, she is going to be the triathlete savior for every triathlete that gets shit for not being able to handle their bike. They can go, yeah, well, Shireen Van Anroy, she's a cyclocross champ.
Hey, don't.
And a triathlete.
Don't forget about Magalie Rochette, who started off as a triathlete.
That's true.
Can I also say that Rebecca Ferringer, totally, totally not going to finish in the top 10. Not going to do it. I'm winking. Probably no one knows it. Probably everyone's just going to give me so much shit for like being harsh on Rebecca, even though this is like me trying to like provide motivation. Also a triathlete. So, you know, when she proves me wrong.
I guess my argument would be Shireen is a current triathlete.
Oh. No. Okay. Okay.
Or at least as of last year. Maybe she's given it up now that she's, like, you know, found success in cyclocross.
So that's something, obviously, is that this year is the first year we're having a separate we're having a juniors world championship, junior women's race. And that's awesome.
Yeah, and six separate races. So this is the first year that every category gets their own start time. So three races on Saturday, three races on Sunday, which is really great. But what do y'all think? What do you want to jump in there? Let's just do winners. You know, what do you think for the junior women?
Well, can we start with how they decided that they looked at the greatness that is U.S. collegiate nationals, and they said, we want to copy the way that you do call-ups for collegiate nationals, except we're going to do it at the world championships.
Yeah.
Wait, can you explain? Because I don't understand what happened.
Which means what?
They're doing call-ups one by one by federation ranks. And so they're going to go through one by one. And so a rider from insert random country here will be starting in front of Puck Pieters, who's, I guess to spoil my pick, is probably going to finish second.
Wait, so how does this...
Yeah,
so Puck Pieters is in the number one
so
country,
it's one
but
rider...
Since Sheeran will be first?
I mean, I would assume so. I mean, isn't she ahead of... I would assume she's ahead of Puck in the rankings, but...
So they go... So they're going to go Dutch, U.S., Belgium, and then start again at the top?
Yeah. Just like collegiate Nats.
Yeah.
One rider from each country in the order that the countries are ranked.
Well, gotcha. And so what, I mean, this one, what's kind of crazy about Sheeran too, Van Anroy, did I do that right?
Yeah.
Last year, you know, Puck Pieters tore it up, and she might have won Euros too, but, you know, I think people were looking, I had it on people that know things were like, dude, like Puck Pieters is like the real deal. Like, you think some of these riders who are like crushing it now, like watch her, and like Sheeran's kind of kicking her butt. It's just crazy. Like, she kind of came out of nowhere and is like, it's like, wait, time out. The Dutch have two women who might be like generational talents, you know, and could Puck become the Van Aert to Sheeran? I mean, getting way ahead of myself here, but, you know, it just seems like it could be this interesting dynamic, especially as Sheeran Van Anroy has the success. She is a Trek rider, and so I believe she signed with Telnet next year.
Yep.
Or yep. The yes. Well, yes, Telnet's leaving the Lions, the Balois Lions. Insert.
She was riding one of those Trek Telnet white warranty replacement bikes that we see on many of the Trek riders out there.
Oh yeah, I have one. It's a very nice bike. It's super fast.
Yeah.
it's an awesome bike. Yeah, so I think it'd be super interesting. You know, beyond that, I think there was the Helen 100 series to kind of look at, and, you know, Madigan won one. Madigan Monroe, the American, Lizzie Gonzalez won one. Then I think was it Femme Van Empel? Is another Dutch rider who's in the mix there. Mm-hmm. You know, but the caveat with those is that Van Anroy and Pieters were kind of sort of racing elites, I think, while those races were going on. And so that's one thing to consider, is that there's that little bit of unknown. But it seems like there is a good shot at an American medal, and certainly being on the wide-angle podium. So that should be super exciting to watch.
I mean, you look at... Right. I mean, just for comparison, you look at Hoogerheide, where Sheeran was up in the top 10. You got Femme Van Empel at 32nd, Madigan Monroe at 38th, and then where is Puck? Was at 16th.
Yeah. So
let's quickly move over to the junior men. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on this. I kind of figure it's going to be Thibaut who's going to take that win, unless he has any issues again. But anybody got some hot takes in the junior men's field?
I got nothing. I'm sorry.
I felt since I completely blew it on the music thing, and to use my pun from earlier, I think clearly if he doesn't win, the title of the race report is going to have to be T-Ball Ness and the Infinite Sadness.
Beautiful. You made up for that. Here will be my hot tip for everyone watching the junior men's race. Leonard Bellmans is a Spencer Petrov doppelganger.
All right.
We were calling him Fake Spencer on the podium.
Well, I know very little in terms of beyond Tebow, but you know, I think at Valkenburg we saw Lane Maher. He heat checked. I think he was leading going into the last lap of the junior men's race and finished fifth. It seems like your boy, Andrew Strohmeyer, definitely, I think, you know, has a shot, like one of those junior American men, to do something cool. He definitely had some good results.
Yeah, you know, hope so. He's going to be on that front row with that snake staging order. I think Lane's U23.
No, but I'm saying at Valkenburg when he was a junior.
Okay.
Like he heat checked. He was literally,
gotcha.
I'm pretty sure, leading going into the Bell Lap.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I was just saying that, like, that's one that sticks out in terms of a junior American since, I think, H. Hacked, who kind of heat checked at Worlds. And it seems like, we've talked about, Andrew kind of has the profile, the riding style to mix it up. And he's not afraid. He has a lot of experience to kind of, like, get messy and sloppy and throw some bows with the Euro boys.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Zach, on men's U23? Ryan Camp seems to be the heads on favorite here.
Yeah, I have zero thoughts about that one.
Yeah, although I will say, maybe Kevin Kuhn was a guy who won the World Cup, but would have won, was leading the Hoegerheide before he snapped his chain. So I take it back. I think that's going to be a good battle between Camp and Kuhn, and then Antoine Benoit.
That sounds about right.
Also,
yeah. Oh yeah, he was in the mix last year. I, you know, now that you mention, yep. I think we've talked about, I think this is a reoccurring theme on our podcast, whether it be this or Grodio, is the home court advantage. So I bet there's going to be, because didn't a Swiss rider won the junior men's race? I feel like there's going to be a Swiss rider who's just going to, like, heat check the living daylights out of it. And, you know, one that we had circled who we're going to unfortunately miss is Cindy Poof. And, you know, we wish her the best as she recovers from her crash down in Pisgah. It seems like the door is open for a Swiss rider to represent in front of the home crowd. I think it's going to happen somewhere. And so it seems like Kuhn
right.
could be a good
okay.
bet to do that.
So yeah, we'll pencil Kevin Kuhn in for that, for taking one for the home team.
Well, then I just want to pencil in Dario Lillo for the men's juniors. There you go, Swiss.
All right,
all right.
You're calling
he's got
it.
That one. He's on a winning streak.
Yep. I'm reading the results.
Bravo.
Last one. We didn't really talk about the U23 women, the hopes and expectations that went through that field once Alvarado decided she wasn't racing with them. Who's gonna step up? Who's gonna be in there? I mean, we're looking at Inga Vanderheiden, I think, is definitely one of the names that can be up there. But other than that, Anna Kay and man, I think, you know, at least podium chances, I think Katie Klaus has a good opportunity here. You know, you also have the French champ Marie Norber Ribarola and Manon Baker, I guess, would be another one that we've seen up near the front. But any thoughts on women's U23, Zach?
I don't know. What is it we say about Katie Klaus?
She has more championships than she has years.
Well, that too, but all she does is win championships.
All she does, she's the Chris Carter of cyclocross.
Man, it's weird. It's like we've seen with Vanderheiden, she's a powerhouse. Technically, she's really not super great. I mean, I think it was Evie who just went die. Like, I just remember Mount Crumpet at Jingle Cross. Like, Vanderheiden got there first, and like Evie Richards was just like swooping right around her and just dropped her like on the descent. But it seems like technical skills might not play as much of a role here. You know, so I mean, it's hers to lose. You know, I think Klaus, I think we'll all be watching, is probably, I mean, she's one of the best, if not the best podium, one of the best podium shots that the U.S. contingent has. But it depends who shows up. You know, Anna Kay started the season great. She's had great races. Bakker's had great races. Norbert Riberal. Hopefully she fixed her rear derailleur. You know, I'm super excited about this one. I don't know who's going to win, and I'm actually really interested to see how this plays out because I think it's who's going to bring their A game that given day.
Well, I'm going to pick Riberal. I think she showed she has the power to stick with the elites before her mechanical, and I don't know. I like it. I like her as the hot pick. I do want to say that Inga Vanderheiden, you know, she goes out so hard. She's another Vander Holshot. So could be one of those things where she gets in the front and some sort of separation happens behind her and she's able to play that to her advantage. So yeah, I'm excited to watch this race as well.
Just as an aside, why couldn't Laura be the one who started great in the women's field? You know, I mean, she has the name. She's got the Verdon hole shot.
Wait, who?
It's right there.
I know.
Laura Verdon shot.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I mean,
I
Laura Verhol. It's hard to say though, so maybe that's good she doesn't.
No,
Laura
Verhol. It would just be the Verdon shot. I mean, it would be like whomever wins. You know, it's like the Verdon shot. You took the Verdon shot. You know, it's like.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind
of this is the part of the show when we workshop is one of my favorite parts of the show.
Our disappointment that you're not living up to your name. You know, it was like. Yeah. You know, like Lars Boom had the ultimate. He could just be like, excuse me, boom, goes the dynamite. You know, it just like it works so well. A great name. Yeah, that is kind of disappointing. So my question, you know, we're looking at a situation where I think if we're being honest, it seems like the Dutch are the favorite in 5 of 6 races. It just seems kind of crazy. But, you know, so that's what people expect. How many do you think they're actually going to take home?
So you're saying so just the men, junior men would be the one that they're not the favorite.
Yeah.
I guess we did pick
favorites, but like now if looking at it that way, you know, but how
we should give, I think we're giving the hometown favorite. We're giving the U23 men to Kevin Kuhn.
Okay.
So we'll go four races.
Okay. So is that our over under number is 4? Like if we're bet, that's the yes. betting line is over under is 4.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
Luke, get on this roller derby over under for the Dutch winning championships.
Man, because that's a tough play, right? Because so like we could argue that like baseline we expect 4, you know, and so then to bet
the
it would be difficult.
The men's and women's elite. I mean, the odds are astronomical there, right? I mean, it's tough. You're almost getting no odds.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, between Vanderpool and like I'd pick your. Pick your flavor in the women.
Yeah, a duchy, right. But, you know, if then Sana or someone rocks the cart and shocks the world, you know, then all of a sudden your play is kind of... So would you guys... All right, given that 4 is a wash for the Dutch, would you bet the over or the under? If gambling were legal, of course.
So if you're betting under, you're saying 3.
Yeah.
So it's either 3 or 5. I mean, I think I'd have to bet the under.
Oh, is that how that works?
Yeah.
I bet the over. I think only Tebow. Nice. Tebow's going to break the Dutch flag.
Yeah, I would probably go over. It just seems like this is kind of like their year.
I'm starting to sweat now because of all this roller derby money I put up now. I'm starting to get a little worried. Like, uh-oh, hope I can pay my mortgage.
Hey, well, you know, I know this doesn't count for you, but for anybody else out there worried about their roller derby points, if you join the wide angle podium, you get 500 points. So if you want to get into roller derby and you want to get a head start right out of the gate, become a wide angle podium member.
And it's a good time to get in because there is, what, 7 bets for 8, 9 wow. bets for this weekend alone. So you can have,
yeah,
you can have,
it's a good one.
A lot of fun.
Awesome. All right, guys, have we done it?
I think so.
I think so too.
I think we did.
This is a rare, even though it's 11 o'clock at night for me, it's not for you guys. Michael has to go back to work.
So yeah, we got to wrap up.
All right.
Sweet.
Michael, Where can people get a hold of you?
They can get a hold of me on Twitter at LandSoftly, where I'm opining about gravel and USA cycling. And you can look for my photos on Yeah You Ride on Instagram.
Awesome. Zach,
when is this podcast coming out?
Good question. Well, before World, tomorrow. So hopefully tomorrow. Hopefully.
Thursday. Okay. I'm on Twitter at TheShoeStar. I will still be at Cyclocross Magazine. My last day at Cyclocross Magazine is on Friday. Wow. And so I will be hopefully bouncing around the cyclocross media world. Bill, you made the mistake of giving me the keys to the mothership over at CX Hairs, and it's already been a blast putting out some content there, hoping to stay involved over at Cyclocross Magazine. So for now, we'll just say at the Shoe Star. And, you know, I think a lot of your cross needs for Worlds results, race reports, pictures will be over at cxmagazine.com. So check it out.
Awesome. Free agent, Zach Schuster. You can find everything I got going on at CX Hairs on Twitter, Instagram. Also, check out cxhairs.com, where you can find posts from all three of us. So go check those out. And we will be back with you after Worlds. Also, make sure you're recording.